Well, good morning, everyone. It's great to see you, and so glad you're here for our series Exponential, and I'm really glad you made it to the service today. We're going to talk about serving today, and I was thinking about something that happened to me when I was in graduate school. You know, when you're in graduate school, you have no money, and I was working another job, and Kelly was working another job, and we didn't have a lot of time to ourselves, so one weekend, we said, let's plan a little getaway, a getaway weekend. And we looked at our newspaper, and I was going to school at Duke University at the time, so we looked at our newspaper, and there was an ad for the Ritz-Carlton in Washington, D.C. for $99 a night. And I said, man, we found it, because if you've ever been to a Ritz-Carlton, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like a primo hotel, and they had it for $99 a night. So I got in my little 1992 Bonneville, gray, red interior, bay magnet. I drove over to campus. I picked Kelly up after her class, and it was like raining and nasty and all that stuff. And we drove up I-95 to D.C., and we got there, and there's like the Ritz-Carlton, you know, in all of its glory. And my car is dirty and nasty from the rain, and I pull into the circular drive, and then the bell guys are out there with their long tails and their hats. And the first bell guy comes running around behind my car over to my door, opens my door, and I know he's just going to say to me, like, keep moving, buddy, the Motel 6 is down the street. But instead, he talks back across the top of the car to his buddy on the other side, and he says, the gentleman from North Carolina has arrived. And I'm thinking, well, the gentleman from North Carolina has arrived. Then he runs around the other side of the car. He opens up Kelly's door, and he says, whom are we welcoming to the Ritz-Carlton? And she gives him our name. He talks to his buddy back at the computer, and he types in Mr. and Mrs. Searcy, and by the time he gets our luggage, well, our, like, garbage bags with duct tape out of the car, they've got us checked in, they give us the keys, and man, like minutes later, our car's in the valet, and we're in the room, and we're ready to go for our weekend in D.C., and I'm like intrigued. I'm like, how did this happen? You know, so like, how did he know he was from North Carolina? And Kelly said, well, didn't he catch it? When the car drove up, he ran around the back of the car, he looked at the tag, saw that it was North Carolina tag, because we were in North Carolina, and he welcomed us, and then when he got my name, he told it to the guy over at the computer, and they had our cards out before we got up to our room and all that. So now I'm like, oh, this is just like amazing. It's going to be a great weekend. We go down for dinner. As we're walking out to go to dinner, he literally says to us, have a great night, Mr. and Mrs. Searcy. I'm like, how did you remember our name? And so now I'm like, got to talk to the guy. And he's telling me, he's like, well, every day before we start, we have a meeting. And they go over all these customer service rules. And apparently, like, the Ritz-Carlton's really thought this through. I mean, they have what they call the Ritz-Carlton Credo. And their credo is, we are ladies and gentlemen serving ladies and gentlemen. And they've learned how to provide excellent service. And you know, even like today, when you see one of those magazine stories about the best customer service in America, I mean, who's always at the top? Like the Ritz-Carlton. And then right next to it, it's usually Nordstrom. You ever shopped at Nordstrom? And then right down from that, it's like L.L. Bean. But you know what's kind of sad? Do you know who's missing from that list? The church. I mean, why is it the church, like, the number one place of customer service in America? I mean, why shouldn't we be on a list of, like, the, you know, the best place for service in Metro New York City? I mean, what if it was, like, you know, Saks, The Journey, you know, right? Like, just like that, you know? Like, we were on that list. Because we have, as the church, as Christians, we have, like, a 2,000-year history of serving people, of meeting the needs of other people. And I want you to understand that when you serve somebody else, it has a compounding effect. Because here we are a decade later, and I'm still telling you the story about the great service I got at the Ritz-Carlton back in the late 90s. Well, I want to introduce you today to a minor character who had a major impact through her service. So if you will, find your message notes inside your program. And I want to begin by giving you a definition of serving. And as you find your message notes, let me say a big hello to everybody who's joining us in Jersey City and in Brooklyn. And so glad everybody's here in Manhattan as well. In just a moment, I want to introduce you to Tabitha. But first, let me give you a definition of serving. Here's what serving is. Serving is the act of putting the needs of others before my needs. Just jot that down in your notes. It's the act of putting the needs of others before my needs. That's what we want to talk about today. And when you put somebody else's needs above your own needs, that has an exponential impact. Has an exponential impact in their life, in your life, and in the life of the people in our city, in our world, that kind of thing. Now, maybe you're thinking right about now, You know, Nelson, I came here today because I've got some significant needs in my life. Hey, look, some of you had a really tough week. I understand that. Some of you had a really bad morning. I understand that. And maybe you came here today and you said, you know, what I need today is I just need God to give me something. I need God's power in my life. I need God to meet my needs. And here I just wrote down that serving is the act of putting the needs of others before my needs. And, hey, I know other people have needs, but doggone it, I've got needs too. Well, let me give you a principle of spiritual maturity. And the principle is God will meet your needs whenever you decide to meet the needs of others. You see, if you want God to meet your needs, if you want to walk out of here today with your cup really full, then you make a decision today to meet the needs of others. You see, in a real weird kind of supernatural way, the way that God will meet my needs and your needs is when we meet the needs of other people. It's only when we get outside of our shell of selfishness that God can fill us up. And so today, when you decide to serve, that could be the greatest thing you decide to do, because God's going to give his power in your life. God's going to give you strength to do it. God's going to work in your life in a really big way. And let me prove that to you by giving you the story of Tabitha, the compounding life of Tabitha. Her story is nestled away at the end of Acts chapter 9. Acts chapter 9 is one of the most powerful chapters in the entire New Testament. And so oftentimes people overlook these last few verses of this chapter, because what goes on in the beginning of Acts chapter 9 in the life of Paul, Saul, is so incredible that a lot of people miss this little character named Tabitha. And she is a minor character that had a major impact. And so let's follow her story, and then, like we did last week with Josiah, let's extract some principles as to how we too can live a compounding life of service. So it's a long passage. Grab your pen, grab your finger, grab your neighbor's finger, I don't know. Follow along with me as I read, okay? Verse 36. There was a believer in Joppa named Tabitha, which in Greek is what? Dorcas. She was always doing kind things for others and what? Helping the poor. Verse 37. At this time, she became ill and died. That's not really great. But then her friends prepared her for burial and laid her in an upstairs room. And then they had heard that Peter was nearby at Lydda. So they sent two men to beg him, "Please, Peter, come as soon as possible." So Peter returned with them, and as soon as he arrived, they took him upstairs, and the room was filled with widows who were weeping, and read this phrase with me, showing him the coats and other garments Dorcas had made for them. So they said, look, Dorcas is dead, but look at what she left behind. She's been serving people. She's been making these coats. She's been making these garments. She's been making these jackets and helping us. But Peter asked them, he said, "Leave the room." Then he knelt and he prayed, and turning to the body, he said, "Get up, Tabitha." And she opened her eyes. Okay, now that's pretty, don't miss that. And then when she saw Peter, she was surprised. No, she sat up. She sat up, verse 41. He gave her his hand, helped her out of the coffin, I guess, I don't know. Then he called in the widows and all the believers, and he showed them that she was alive. Verse 42, you better believe, the news raced throughout the whole town. Hey, you know that lady Tabitha who makes those coats for people who are in need? She died last week. Peter came over, prayed for her. God raised her from the dead. She's now walking around serving the poor once again. And Peter stayed a long time in Joppa living with Simon, a leather worker. What a story. What a story of service. Now, if you turn over in your notes, what we want to do today is we want to extract how to live a compounding life. And Pastor Adam and I are going to teach this message together, and he's going to come in just a moment and get us started with the first way that we can live a compounding life.
So in our message notes, the first way to live a life of compounding service is to acknowledge that God has given me serving gifts. I acknowledge that God has given me serving gifts. Now, when you think of serving gifts, I want you to think of any of the talents, the gifts, the abilities that you have in your life, and I want you to recognize that you have these abilities because God has given them to you. And God hasn't given you these things just for your own advancement in life. He's given them to you so you can use them to serve others. And our character for today, Tabitha, she modeled this well. She's a great example for us. You'll see the verse there in your notes. It says that there was a believer in Joppa named Tabitha. Circle that word, believer. And then it says something interesting. It says that her name in Greek was Dorcas. Well, why does she have two names? Why does the author use two names here? Well, see, Tabitha started going by a different name after she became a follower of Jesus. Because when she became a follower of Jesus, it literally changed who she was. Before she was a follower of Jesus, she was known for being selfish. And then after she became a follower of Jesus, she became a servant. She became someone who met the needs of others, as Pastor Nelson shared earlier. And she wanted to make sure everyone knew that this change had occurred in her life. And the author wanted to make sure that everybody knew he was talking about the same person. Because maybe some of these people hadn't seen Tabitha in a while. They didn't know the change. Maybe you've met someone like that. You haven't seen them for years. You run into them and like, you became a different person. Like, well, I'm a follower of Jesus. Maybe that happened to you. And so it's interesting that becoming a follower of Jesus, it literally changed Tabitha into becoming a servant. And there's also some significance to this from being a believer, because along with gifts, talents, and abilities, there's another distinction for a believer called spiritual gifts. Now, what are spiritual gifts? And that's what we're talking about today. Well, I did a little research this week because I wanted us to have a good definition to work off of. I found one. I think it's a good one to use. And it says that spiritual gifts are special attributes. They're given by the Holy Spirit to use to serve others within the local church. And so let's unpack that for a minute. First of all, spiritual gifts are given to us by God. So we don't do anything to earn them. You don't get to choose the gifts that you want. And they're equally valuable in God's eyes. So God sees all of the gifts. He sees them as useful, and he wants us all to use them. And the second part of that is that we recognize that we're supposed to use our gifts within the church. And that leads us to the next verse in our outline. It's a key verse for today, so we're going to read it out loud together. Now, I want to make sure everyone in Jersey City is ready. Are you guys ready to read this? How about Brooklyn? How about here in Manhattan? Are you guys ready to read this verse out loud? Okay, ready? Go. A spiritual gift is given to each of us as a means of helping the entire church. Underline that phrase, each of us. And then after you underline the phrase, I want you to turn to the person sitting beside you and with a big smile on your face, tell them, you have a gift. Go ahead, tell them. Fantastic. All right, so we have gifts and we're supposed to use them. We're supposed to use them for the entire church. Now you're at church today, here at The Journey. That's a great first step. And my goal for you today is to help you discover what your spiritual gifts are and then find areas where you can begin to put those gifts into practice. And you know, that you say, well, that's a big goal. I don't even know what my spiritual gifts are. Well, that's okay, because you picked a great day to be here. Once a year at The Journey, we do a spiritual gift assessment. Don't worry, it's not a test. It's not in depth. I think you'll find it a pretty fun activity. In fact, in order to get into the right frame of mind, we're going to go through a little exercise to help you with this assessment. Now, I thought about doing deep breathing exercises, but I'm not sure that would really help. Oh, if it does, go ahead. You just deep. Okay, all right, never mind. All right, so here's what I do want you to do. I want to help you get in the right frame of mind. So here's what you need to think about. Think of a time in your life where you just felt totally energized. Maybe you felt creative. You were innovative. I mean, you really felt like you were just in the zone, as some people refer to it. Now, where were you at? Were you at work? Was it at church? Was it during a volunteer time? Were you with friends? Maybe it even happened on a vacation. Okay, so does everyone have that mental picture in mind? Now, here's why this is important when it comes to spiritual gifts. Your spiritual gifts will often align with the abilities, the personality type you have, past experiences, the things that you love. So what we're about to talk about may sound quite familiar to you, and the reason why is because God often aligns the spiritual gifts along with who you already are as a person. So let's jump into it. I've listed in your message notes a list of spiritual gifts, and what I want to do is just walk through each one of these, giving a little bit of a description for what they are. So don't mark them off yet. Let's go through the whole list first, then we'll come back and mark a couple of these that you think fit you. So the first one there is administration. Now, if your boss or your friend says that dreaded phrase, we need to get organized, and you get excited, okay? Some of you are like, that happens to people? Yes. And they have a gift. It's called administration. The next one, discernment. People with discernment, someone comes to you and they say, I need advice about this big decision I've got in my future. You give them advice and it actually goes well. You may have the gift of discernment, encouragement. You just notice when people are down and you're able to speak words to them that lift them up. Giving. Now, God calls all of us to give. And here at The Journey, we think everyone should be obedient by returning a tithe to God, the first tenth of their income. Giving is something we're all called to do. But some of you, you really go far beyond that. You stretch yourselves financially. You teach the rest of us how we can give in greater ways. Leadership. How do you know you have the gift of leadership? It's a simple test. Is anyone following you? Okay. You've heard this proverb before. He who thinks he is a leader and has no followers is simply taking a walk. Okay. Easy test to take. Shepherding. You're a caring person. Teaching. You like to study the Bible. You actually know the minor characters we're talking about in this series. All right, there's a good litmus test for teaching. You share practical things that you've learned from God's Word. The gift of pioneering. New things excite you. When we announced One in a Million and that we were going to add a new location in Queens, you got fired up. Well, maybe you have the gift of pioneering. Evangelism. Now, evangelism is similar to giving. God calls all of us to share our faith with our friends, our coworkers, those who he's placed in our lives. But some of you, you're really good at it. I mean, you just teach us all how to do it better, to look for new and creative ways to share our faith. So you have the gift of evangelism. Faith. You have a high trust in God. We say our goal for One in a Million is $300,000, and you go, we're going to make it. God's going to provide. We're going to be able to meet that goal. If that's your attitude when you hear goals, you have the gift of faith. Hospitality. This is a fun one. People with the gift of hospitality, before they became a follower of Jesus, they threw incredible parties, okay? Now that they're a follower of Jesus, they still throw incredible parties. The only difference is the cops are not called quite as often, all right? Just not quite as often, all right? Mercy. You're a good listener. You're empathetic. We all know someone like that. Serving. You look for ways to help us out. You'll pick up trash on your way out today. You're always looking for how someone else can be helped with something. And then there's wisdom. People with wisdom are good at extracting principles from past experiences in their lives, sharing those with someone who's going through a similar situation. So look back over this list, and here's what I want you to do. Let's say two. Go back through the list, and let's mark two of these that as I was describing them, you thought to yourself, that's me. That describes me. Go ahead and mark two of those. And as you do, think of ways that you can begin to use these gifts more in 2009 here at The Journey. And some of you, you want a more scientific way. I understand that. You like to get more involved with these types of assessments. So there's a link that's included in your message notes. It's a website you can go to anytime. You can take this online assessment. It'll take you about 10 minutes to do. And it will further explore these spiritual gifts. But taking this test with hundreds of people in various settings, I found that most of the time, whatever you just marked off there, you're usually about 90% accurate. I mean, usually your first inclination to these things is correct. And so once you've identified that you have spiritual gifts, we have to be quick to put them to practice. We can't just sit back and recognize we have gifts. And that leads us to the second point in our message notes, if you want to go ahead and turn over. It says that I must be proactive in using my serving gifts. That I must be proactive in using my serving gifts. Now, discovering your gifts is good. That's a great place to start. But where it gets really fun and where you begin to find a lot of fulfillment is when you put those gifts into practice. You've got to start to use them. Now, our character for today, Tabitha, she did this. In our message notes, Acts 9:36 says that she was always doing kind things for others and helping the poor. Underline the phrase, doing kind things for others. Do you know anyone like that in your life? They're just doing kind things for others. That's how Tabitha was. Do you know that God honors that type of attitude in our life? Someone who just looks for kind things that they can do for others? Not the person who sits back and says, I want to wait for the perfect serving opportunity to arrive so that I can use my unique giftedness that God has given me and me alone. No, God doesn't honor that attitude. God honors the attitude of someone who says, where's the need and how can I serve? Someone who says, is there an opportunity for me to serve? And how can I be obedient to meet that need? See, this attitude of opportunity and obedience, God honors that. God honors it when you're obedient with the opportunities he gives you. And I believe he honors it in two distinct ways. First off, I think that when you serve, when there's a need, God will further clarify to you the unique spiritual gifts that he's given you. It's oftentimes that in serving, you begin to recognize even more how God's uniquely gifted you. And then the second way that I believe he'll honor that attitude is he'll provide more opportunities for you to serve. New and exciting ways to serve using the gifts that maybe you've never even thought of before. But it really does begin with the attitude. And you know, there's multiple gifts. And so in order for everyone to be able to use their gifts, we have to have multiple opportunities. And the good news is that here at The Journey, we have multiple opportunities for you to serve. I've listed a few of them in your message notes. And kind of the same drill. I want to walk through these, but hold off on checking them off, because there may be one towards the end that you go, well, that really fits me even better. And our goal as we go through this is for you to find a place of service where you can use the gifts that God's given you. All right, look at the first one, serving on Sunday. Now, hopefully someone greeted you when you came in today. I know that you received a program because you're all taking notes. Well, the folks who did that, they're volunteers. They're here serving. And all they had to do was show up an hour before the service starts. All of our locations do this. You show up an hour before the service starts. We go over the day, make sure that you know where you'll be serving. We get you in your position so you can begin to serve. And many people tell us that's the most significant hour of their week. You see next there, setting up and tearing down on our setup and tear down team. Okay, so we don't have permanent space. I'm not sure if everyone knows this, but in Manhattan, Jersey City, Brooklyn, and Queens, when we start on Easter, you can look around you and everything you see was set up by someone else, and it will be torn down by someone later today. Now, some of you guys, you really have nice muscles, and I'm a little uncomfortable saying that out loud, all right? I feel awkward, but you work out like 17 times a week. Well, here's my proposition. Work out like 16 times a week and make up for that workout by throwing some speakers around at any of our locations on a Sunday and helping us get set up. That would be a great team for you to join, the worship arts team. Now, some of you, you have some musical abilities. You can sing, you can play instruments, you know how to run a soundboard, you can edit videos together. Now, that's a gift. And we're continuing to add new services. We're continuing to add new locations. And that means new opportunities for those of you who have been gifted in that area that you can begin to put those gifts into practice. Mission groups. What's a mission group? Well, our mission groups are our growth groups with a community service project. And we used to call them epic groups. But these are growth groups that are on mission in our community to make a difference, meeting needs in a practical way. And for those of you who have a heart for reaching out into our city and community service projects, you need to sign up for a mission group. We also go to South Africa. We go to San Francisco. We're involved in missions both here locally and globally. Maybe you've been gifted to do that. Super Service Thursday. What's that? Well, a group of volunteers gets together every Thursday, early evening. They have usually a movie playing in the background, and they have snacks. It's really a great way to meet people. Here's what they do. They put together the program that you were given on your way in today. They help prepare everything to make all of our services go on a Sunday. Super Service Monday is similar to that, except for this team of people gets together on Monday early evenings, and they help follow up from everything that's happened in our services today. A lot, we want to help people feel special, a lot like what Pastor Nelson was talking about earlier with the Ritz. Just making sure people know we appreciated they joined us on a Sunday service. Baptism services. Maybe you've been gifted to help with that. Here's a real practical thing you do at a baptism service. You give someone a towel after they've been baptized. Isn't that great? Someone's just had this life-changing experience of baptism. You're the first face they see when they come out of the water. You're like, congratulations, here's your towel. I mean, that's awesome. What a great way to serve. Office volunteer. Those of you with the gift of administration, we always need your help. We have countless projects going on, files piling up on our desk, and you can help us out with those. Now look back over this list. Which one of these fits you? Which one of these teams can you join today? I want you to mark off one or two of these options. And then here's the most important step of the day. After you've thought through, you've marked off a couple of those, let's find the connection card that was mentioned earlier today. And if you flip over on the back of the connection card, you'll see some next steps listed. And I want to draw your attention to the last two next steps. One of them says, learn more about the opportunity for serving. And then there's a blank. Here's what you need to do. Whatever you just checked off, transfer that to your connection card. So maybe you checked off worship arts. Maybe you checked off mission groups. Maybe it's Super Service Thursday. Maybe it was baptism. Write that in the blank. Maybe you want to serve on a Sunday. Well, we've listed some Sundays there for you on the connection card. All you have to do is check one of those Sundays. We'll follow up with an email making sure you know how you can get involved immediately, because that's our goal. We want you to be able to begin to serve as soon as possible. And guys, here's the truth. If you don't write something in on this connection card today, now, we're less of a church. We are less of a church in this city. We're not able to do all the things that God's called us to do. You're the way that we're going to meet the call that God has placed on this church. So don't delay. Write that area on your connection card today. And I also want you to do that because I want you to obey what God's commanded each of us to do. 1 Timothy 4:14 in our message note says, "Do not neglect the spiritual gift you have received." So don't neglect the gifts that God's given you. Make sure you sign up for a team today so you can begin to serve.
Then on the back of your notes, here's the other lesson that we can learn in living a life of compounding service from Tabitha. On the back of your notes, and it is, consider the benefits of serving others. Consider the benefits of serving others. You know, it's okay to think about the benefits. You know, the primary reason you should serve is because God calls us to serve. We should serve out of obedience. But there's also some benefits that we get. Just like God meets your needs by helping you meet the needs of others, there are other benefits that you get. Now, what are these benefits that you get? What happens when you serve? Well, there are intrinsic benefits and, of course, extrinsic benefits. But let's just look at Tabitha. I mean, what was the benefit she received from being such a person of service? So let's pick up the story in your notes, verse 37. About this time, she became ill and died. It's unfortunate. The story ended there. It'd be quite a bummer of a story. Her friends prepared her for burial and laid her in an upstairs room. Then later, Peter shows up. But Peter asked them all to leave the room. He knelt down and he prayed. Turning to the body, he said, "Get up, Tabitha." And she opened her eyes. When she saw Peter, she sat up. He gave her his hand and helped her up. Then he called in the widows and all the believers, and he showed them that she was alive. Now that is quite a benefit of serving. Okay? Did you catch that? Tabitha was so beneficial to God's work that she died, that God used Peter and the power to bring her back to life. Now, I wish I could promise that to all of you, but I can't. It seems that this was sort of a once in the history of the church kind of thing. That it seems like God used this just to highlight the power of service. And he said, you know, I'm going to highlight the power of service so strong, I'm going to bring somebody back to life just to show you how important it is. I mean, she got back up and she started making coats for the poor and making garments for those in need. She kept on serving. Now, by the way, just from a theological standpoint, this was not a resurrection. It was really a resuscitation. Jesus was resurrected from the dead, never to die again. Tabitha was resuscitated from the dead to live for a little while and then die again. But that's a pretty good benefit. I mean, think about that. You know, you're serving. Maybe you're on that setup team and you're one of those buff guys like Adam was talking about, you know, like me. And you're, that was not meant to be a joke. And, you know, you're like over in Jersey City and you're lifting a speaker up and the speaker falls on you and it kills you. And then, like, Pastor Jim runs over and says, you know, "Get up." And then your eyes pop open and you're back to life. I mean, that would be pretty cool if it happened. So I've started thinking, well, what are the benefits? You know, if we don't necessarily have this resuscitation thing going, what are some of the benefits? So I started asking people this week. Ask people at the office, you know, why do you come in to serve? Ask people before the service, why do you serve? And I made a list. This is what they told me. They said, you know, when I serve, it models the life of Jesus. It grows me spiritually. It makes me healthier. It drives selfishness from my life. It produces peace and joy in my life. It allows me to invest in other people. It helps grow the church. It gives a sense of accomplishment. It allows me to make friendships. I didn't expect that one. People told me over and over this week, some of the best friendships that they formed have happened through serving together. It allows me to belong to something bigger than myself. It makes me more like Jesus. It makes me a better leader, somebody told me. And then I want to point out two other benefits just to add to that long list of ones you gave me. In Luke 6:38, God says he will bless you according to how much you serve others. Give to God, it says, and God will give to you. Look, you want to be blessed? Be a blessing to others. Give your time to God. God will bless you in return. And then it says, the measure you use for others is the one that God will use for you. So if you just give a teaspoon of service, God just gives you a teaspoon of blessing. You know, you give like a big bucket full of serving, God gives you a bucket full of blessing. This is how he meets your needs. God meets your needs by calling you to serve other people. So you say, well, God, meet my needs. He says, go meet the needs of other people. And then each time it says, 2 Corinthians 12:9, a passage that we don't normally think of as serving, but let's draw the principle out. Each time God said, my gracious favor is all you need. Now, the context is Paul's talking about his thorn in the flesh, but let's extract the principle. Here it is. Underline this phrase. My power works best in your weakness. God says, my power works best in your weakness. So now I'm glad to boast about my weaknesses, says Paul, so that the power of Christ may work through me. What's the benefit? God's power. You want God's power to be evident in your life, then step outside of your comfort zone. You say, well, gosh, I don't know if I can step out and serve. I feel a little bit weak in those areas. I don't know if I can take, you know, and start using my spiritual gift and really make a difference. Look, God's power works best in your weakness. And so if you want God to show up in your life, get outside your comfort zone and start doing something that you didn't think you could do. And God will show up and you'll experience his power and all these other benefits we talked about. Now, let me ask you a question, and this is sort of dangerous because I don't know what you're going to say, and you should never ask a question from the stage if you don't know what people are going to say. But let's just think about the benefit of feeling good for a second. I mean, honestly, doesn't it feel good to serve? By a show of hands, how many of you would just say, you know, when I serve other people, I feel better about myself? Let me just see your hands. Okay, good. That's everybody. Hopefully Jersey City, Brooklyn, everybody there too. Well, if you believe that it feels good to serve, I'm going to give you an opportunity right now, right here, to feel really good. I'm going to give you an opportunity to serve. I know what you're thinking. Well, you know, Nelson, I took my stuff from earlier, and I wrote it on the back of my connection card, and all that's great. Man, we're going to follow up with you this week, and we're going to get you involved in serving, but that's not going to start till tomorrow, or that's not going to start till next week. I'm going to give you an opportunity to serve right now. This past week, I had a conversation that just wouldn't leave my brain. I had a conversation with the director of the Coalition of the Homeless. And what I found out that right now, this time of year in our city, there are people all across this metro area who are freezing to death. Like a dozen people or more freezing to death. That there are literally hundreds of little boys and little girls who are going to bed cold. That there are men and women who are sleeping on streets and they don't even have a jacket or a scarf or some gloves to keep them warm. So I said, we can't allow this to happen. I mean, we as the church are better than this. We can make a difference with this. So today, I'm going to give you an opportunity to serve. And I'm going to give you an opportunity in just a moment to literally give the coat off your back. I'm going to ask you today to take the jacket you wore into the service and give it to somebody in our city who needs it more than you do. And we've arranged with the Coalition of the Homeless where they're going to come by with their truck and they're going to pick up these jackets and scarves and gloves and hats and they're going to take them to the most needy people in our city. And this is going to happen like within the next 24 hours. And so we're going to make a difference today. And I know what you're thinking. Well, gosh, you know, I wish I hadn't worn my jacket I got for Christmas today. Well, this is my nice jacket too. And I'm going to give it. And I'm going to ask you to give it. And I'm going to ask you to give your jacket. And if you can't give your jacket, I'm going to ask you to give your scarf. And if you can't give your scarf, well, I'm going to ask you to give your gloves. And if you can't give your gloves, well, I'm going to ask you to give your hats. And I'm going to ask you in just a moment to come forward at the end of the service in all of our locations and lay your jackets on the altar. And then we're going to distribute those this week to those who are in need. It's a bold step. But you want to serve, right? You want to feel good. And then look at what Jesus says you will be called if you do it. Our memory verse, and you can pick up memory verse cards as you leave. Our memory verse says, the greatest among you must be a servant. So who wants to be great today? Who wants to do something great for God today? Who wants to be great in God's eyes today? Let's bow our heads and pray together. Heavenly Father, I pray just right now you'll speak to us about this area of service. I know the people in our church. I know they have huge hearts. And that's why I can so boldly put this challenge in front of us today. But God, I know there's some that maybe are just thinking, I just don't know if I should do this. And so maybe just right now, just talking to you guys for a moment, just right now, as you pray, maybe you just want to say, God, do you want me to give up my jacket, my coat, my scarf, my gloves? Ask God what he wants you to do. And you know, for you, honestly, it's going to mean that you're going to have to walk home cold today or run from here to the train to get home or Maybe your hands are going to be a little numb when you get there. But by doing this, you're going to help people who otherwise would be cold all week, would be freezing all week. And so really, if you think about it, our little bit of discomfort is nothing compared to the people we're going to help. And you know, I mean, honestly, if you've like got the flu or something like that, you probably don't need to give up your jacket. But for most of us, maybe God's saying to you, just trust me. You say, well, I don't know where I'm going to get the money to buy another one. Maybe God's just saying right now, just trust me. Or maybe, you know, he's saying, at least give up your gloves. I mean, you can do without that. Put your hands in your pocket. God, what do you want us to do? God, we want to be men and women of service, using our gifts, taking advantage of opportunities, experiencing the benefits, but most of all, honoring you. So now as we go into this time, may it just be a time that brings honor and glory to you. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.